You are listening to Larry Connors, USA.
You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
You can't handle the truth!
This is Larry Connors, USA. Larry Connors, USA.
There he is, hair blown majestically, reshooting the scene for his own ad. I hold rallies, and I tell you to ignore masks, and I rip mine off as I vanquish the virus because I am a leader. Fear not, COVID. What a bunch of bullshit.
Well, those are the words of Chris Cuomo from CNN. This is October 6, 2020. That was Cuomo very upset with how Trump left Walter Reed, arrived at the White House, and then walked to the top of a portico overlooking everyone and took off his mask. No one was standing within probably 20 yards of the man at that point. But it was a sign of fear that you should shake in your boots, that the president whips off his mask. And the way it was written and played out by Chris Cuomo there was pretty much akin to a new movie at the theater. Daring, desperate, dangerous. And of course, don't forget, because I'm not going to forget, and I'm going to remind you even more so over the next couple of hours. If there's anyone who does not have the moral ground to stand on and chastise President Trump, it would be Chris Cuomo. For him supposedly saying, I'm locking myself in the basement. I have COVID-19. I'm going to lock myself in the basement. And then later documented outside his house, visiting, looking at another piece of property. But then doing a piece where he shows himself coming up out of the basement. Oh, I haven't seen my family all this time, and he's perspiring like he's been working out. And, of course, don't forget his brother, the governor of New York State, issuing an order that nursing homes had to take COVID-19 positive patients, and if they were already in their care, they had to keep them. Oh, don't remember that. Don't talk about that. Let's focus on Trump. You like scary movies? You like scary movies? You know, the ones where, gotcha! They jump out, Jason in the mask, chainsaw massacre. Mainstream media currently is filled with scary things. Mainstream media is playing Halloween and will between now and Election Day and beyond, but certainly now. Why? Because when President Trump came out of Walter Reed, he made a statement that said, be courageous in the face of this COVID. Do not let it dominate your life. Here are the words of the president.
Don't let it dominate your lives. Get out there. Be careful. We have the best medicines in the world, and it all happened very shortly, and they're all getting approved, and the vaccines are coming momentarily.
All he did was say, don't give in to fear. Do not let it dominate your life. When I had my first child, took my baby girl and I took her out to a park and I spread out a blanket. And I made sure there was nothing around there that would contaminate her or get her involved in anything she shouldn't be in. I set her in the middle of that little blanket. And I'm watching her and I'm kind of getting some food out for us to sit there and have a little picnic. And suddenly she starts screaming. A sweat bee had landed on her wrist and gave her a sting. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. My child's been hit. My child is poisoned. My child. I'll be honest with you. As a new father, yeah, I did get very concerned. But everything was okay. And gradually, I learned to accept that they will fall down, hurt themselves, but normally they'll get up again. Sometimes if you ignore them, they get up quicker. And my second child probably felt that I must not be loved as much, not seem to tender and give me as much attention. We did, but I could see that. You cannot live in fear for you, your family, and your children. Know the risk. Avoid the risk if you can, but always measure them. We're going to be joined a little bit later by Dr. Kevin Pham, COVID policy analyst at Heritage. And, of course, we'll talk about the voting polls and a new warning as we go into the election. And NBC presents a town hall with Joe Biden last night, which was pretty much an infomercial geared to make him look better. Lock and load, ready, on the right.
You can hear podcasts of this program at Larry Connors USA Facebook. Larry Connors USA Facebook.
Businesses, restaurants, nursing homes need to be free of COVID. So you should be contacting Wellington Environmental. A professionally trained team will disinfect your facility using powerful but safe disinfectants. And here's something new. Wellington has a line of foggers that you can use to disinfect your own facility. These foggers are in high demand, but Wellington Environmental has some for now. They cost about $500. But my listeners get a big price break, a $100 discount. You save $100 just by saying you heard about it on Larry Connors USA. For more information on getting your personal fogging device or to schedule professional disinfecting, 314-644-4930. 314-644-4930. Be well with Wellington Environmental.
I want to thank my friends at John Bill Roofing for sponsoring this segment of Larry Connors USA. John Bill Roofing, covering homes, businesses throughout the Midwest with the best quality and lowest price. John Bill Roofing. Call 1-800-NEW-ROOF. 1-800-NEW-ROOF.
Give me one reason to stay here, and I'll turn right back around. Give me one reason to stay here, and I'll turn right back around. Said I don't want to leave you lonely. You gotta make me change my mind.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
I just left Walter Reed Medical Center, and it's really something very special. The doctors, the nurses, the first responders, and I learned so much about coronavirus. And one thing that's for certain, don't let it dominate you. Don't be afraid of it.
The words of President Trump after leaving Walter Reed Hospital and acknowledging that, yes, you should not let it dominate you. You should not be afraid of it. There are things in life, yes, we need to be aware of and fear and caution. And I was mentioning in the monologue about children. We're always, as parents, fearful something will happen to our children. But we cannot continue to keep them under our wing all the time. They've got to go out into life and maybe fall down and hopefully not suffer too much from it. And, of course, we want to be vigilant for anyone who might appear to be threatening to them or any situation that might be threatening. Some parents would not let their kids do any bungee jumping. Mine wanted to do it. I looked at it, looked like it's safe enough. I did it, so, okay, I'll let you do it. Other parents, when they heard about that, said, are you crazy? No, I'm not crazy, but the same token, if I had any doubts about it, then I wouldn't let them do it. So maybe you don't want them riding in a Ferris wheel. Maybe you don't really want them riding around in a car, because who knows what could happen then. Maybe you don't want them riding their bicycle even in your neighborhood. You just never know. Can you live with that kind of fear on a constant basis? And what does it do to your kids? I never say throw caution to the wind. I always want to know the risk. I want to know how it's going down. I want to make sure I have a good assessment of it. Kind of like when I first became a pilot. The first thing the instructor told me after I'd been signed off, he said, now go out on the plane and scare yourself a few times. And I did. Got in some situations that, well, I don't know. I don't know if I'm ready to handle this. But I figured a way out. I never took anyone up in the plane until I was felt more than enough qualified. I certainly didn't put my children or family on the plane or anyone. And yes, every time we would take off, I'm making sure that everything is where it should be and correctly done because I do not want to endanger my family. Bad enough if I make a mistake, but not with my family on board. I'm sure you do that in different ways in what you do with your kids and your family. But when President Trump came back to the White House and said, don't let this fear dominate you. Well, the mainstream media was ready for the attack. I mean, you've got Jim Acosta, the White House correspondent for CNN and NNN. He's not really a correspondent. He's nothing more than a bloodhound that they continue to sick over there to go after Trump. That's all. He later referred to Trump as coronavirus in chief. See? You see how cute that is? Trump is coronavirus in chief. Anchor Chris Cuomo even said, I'm so glad he came back to the White House, see him better because now I don't have to, quote, feign concern for him anymore. In other words, act like I'm really concerned because I guess Chris Cuomo was never concerned, not worried about him. And, of course, their chief medical correspondent, I should say media correspondent, Brian Stelter, who tries to claim that he's an objective journalist, said that Trump returning was not a real show of strength. He said it was a performant show of strength. Dr. Gupta. Sanjay Gupta, who works with CNN as their analyst. He described the fact that Trump was going back to the White House, and with his attitude, don't let it scare you, don't live in fear. Dr. Gupta suddenly was capable of pronouncing Trump is just short of being deranged, but certainly dangerous.
It's a total cognitive dissonance, even within his own mind. What he believes and what he says are diametrically opposed at this point. Not to mention, don't be afraid of it, almost then encourages this completely dangerous, non-scientific approach of herd immunity. Basically saying, don't be afraid. What does that mean, don't be afraid of it? I mean, first of all, it's a contagious disease that kills people. So what are you going to be afraid of if you're not afraid of something like that? Also, are you advocating that people then go get infected? Nothing to be afraid of? We know if that is the policy, if that's the approach, 2 million people could die. Hospitals would become overwhelmed.
Well, Dr. Gupta took what started as a base of that Trump might be cognitive, not collecting his thoughts, reference to what the reality is, to suddenly going to the extreme that what he's proposing could end up with 2 million deaths. Once they scent blood in the water that they think they can use for their gains, they're going to use it. I'm looking at a piece written by, appearing on The Federalist. I can't find the author for this right now. But I did find it interesting. The title is, Corporate Media, Mainstream Media, is Vomiting Trump Coronavirus Reporting All Over the Bed. It begins by saying the latest news cycle over President Trump's COVID-19 diagnosis illustrates yet again how destructive the U.S. corporate media are to national unity and a clear understanding of reality. See, that's something that even Dr. Gupta should know, but he ignored. And I had mentioned this the other day as well, and so does this article. Now, I'll read it directly from the article. Now, the president is 74, and it's common knowledge that the virus hits the elderly especially hard. Yet, even among his age demographic, surviving the disease, not death, is by far the norm. Here we go. According to the Centers for Disease Control's current best estimate, based on data so far of Americans who are ages 70 and older, 94.6% who test positive for COVID will survive. Ages 70 and older, 94.6 for those who test positive will survive. Unless they have underlying health issues, of course. Obesity is one. Trump is overweight. Not morbidly obese, but he is overweight. Well, let me put it this way. I don't know if he's effectively morbidly obese, but he is overweight. If you have diabetes, if you have emphysema, if you have breathing problems, that does increase your risk factor. Those are things to know, but you're going to be totally afraid. If you want a clear example of how the mainstream media sees this and pitches it and wants to claim that Trump is endangering everyone, a CBS correspondent for the White House stated, "I feel safer reporting from North Korea than from the White House." Why? Because you're going to be strung up and executed? Oh, no, no, you might come down with a virus. You think it will kill you? Well, according to this reporter, it might. Well, sure, it might. We are told by the mainstream media, when it involves anything that was with Hillary Clinton's health previously, when she was stumbling, bumbling around and falling down and so forth, you be rational about it. Just be rational. You know, you don't have to go crazy about it. Do you see that reflective now among these guys? No. One White House reporter said, people, he's talking about other reporters at the White House, are angry. It's recklessness out there. As a White House reporters, we put our health at risk every day. Give me a break. You're a White House reporter and you put your health at risk every day. I have tried over the years to make sure that anyone who thought, well, Larry Connors, you must be a very strong journalist. You were brave and fearless when you're going after these cases that they involve police corruption or drug action or drug gangs and so on. You're very courageous. I said, no. No, you look to the other third world countries or where you have gang cartels like Mexico and you report something they don't like. They come and they kill you, your spouse, your children, the dog. Now, that would be living in fear as a reporter, but I'm absolutely incensed. A White House reporter would say, as White House reporters, we put our health at risk every day. You're not in a war zone. You're at the White House. Now, in your mind, it may be a war zone, but nobody's shooting at you, and nobody's going to go kill your family if they don't like the story you do. And Jake Tapper, he just could not hold back. He had to get in on the game because that's what all the mainstream media was doing yesterday as Trump returned. I told you yesterday, watch how the mainstream media plays his return. If he returned, because at the time we were on the air yesterday, we were told he might be there by 1:45 Central Time. He didn't get there until later in the day. But if he hadn't returned, the mainstream media would be all over the fact he's really ill. You cannot elect this man. He'll be dead on arrival. And then when he does return, the first thing they want to do is attack him because he shouldn't be out of the hospital. And Tapper knows exactly where to go to push the right buttons as we were talking in the beginning, I know it's a right button to push. Your concern for the safety and well-being of your children.
President Trump wrote on Twitter, "Don't be afraid of COVID. Don't let it dominate your life." Almost 210,000 Americans are dead from this disease, meaning hundreds of thousands of people in this country are mourning. Oh, we just reached 210,000 since I've been on air. 210,000 Americans dead, hundreds of thousands, if not millions of Americans mourning them. 7.4 million Americans have contracted the disease. Many of them are going to have health problems for the rest of their life. For President Trump, who gets the best medical care of anybody in the world, to say, don't be afraid of COVID, don't let it dominate your life. There are children who don't have parents now because of this virus. Don't let it dominate your life?
See, he worked in those children. All the stats he gave were accurate. He did not give any stat as to how many will have long-lasting effects from COVID, or like any other flu you get, or any other kind of virus you get, or any kind of infection you get. It may resurface down the road in some form or another. And he talks about, and all these children lost their parents. Actually, again, if you look at the number, and any death is a loss, when you think of children, I assume you're thinking about those who still live with you, 18 and under. Now, if you're 45 and your father passed away from this, then you're a child who lost a parent. But you know how he was trying to scare you. More to come.
Road again, just can't wait to get on the road again. The life I love is making music with my friends, and I can't wait to get on the road again. On the road again.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
Whatever happens now is on him. The White House is a cluster. He returned to a cluster and took his mask off. That is COVIDiocy. He's a COVIDiot. You're disrespecting the president. No, he disrespected the presidency. All that's left is the residue of outrage, because that's the only emotion I have.
Chris Cuomo, the only emotion I have left is outrage because Trump returned to the White House. And, of course, he got support from his CNN White House correspondent. I hate giving him that title because he's not a correspondent. Junkyard dog, Jim Acosta, accosting Acosta, saying Trump is the coronavirus in chief. The CNN poll released just yesterday, what timing, found large numbers of the country neither believing the White House messaging on the president's health nor judging him to have acted responsibly. 69% of adults believed either nothing at all or just some of what they heard from the White House. 63% thought he acted irresponsibly. And, of course, don't forget, in the beginning, some on the left were also saying, it's a fake, he doesn't even have it. He's just looking for sympathy. And, of course, they have other surveys that they suddenly push in your face that the NBC News Wall Street Journal poll released Sunday, 52% thought Trump's opponent, Biden, would do better. Only 35% Trump would be the better choice when it comes to dealing with COVID. That survey, by the way, is under question because it really undercounted Republicans, something like 27% tops. The other pretty divided between Democrats and independents. But don't let the facts of a good story get in the way of what you want to say. And that's what they're doing now. And Chris Cuomo saying, going forward, for whatever happens with COVID, it's going to be Trump's fault. Well, you know, to that point, a Republican National Committee spokesman emailed reporters yesterday afternoon with a subject line, President Trump's health improves, media melts down. And that's true. That's true because, one, they didn't really want to think it was true. He's doing it for sympathy. And then he comes back and they think he goes in there and he takes off his mask. Have you seen the video of him taking off the mask? He's not standing near anyone. Now, Rachel Maddow, who the other day said if you pray, you should pray for President Trump, and I commended her for that, is also back to the attack zone and saying that when Trump did that, if you watch the video, he's gasping for air. He can barely breathe. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'll let you hear more of that in the next hour. They just don't like the fact that he came back, stood up there, and took his mask off. That by taking the mask off with no one around him, gives the impression of the world, the nation, you don't need to wear a mask. And they claim that he takes great leaps of belief. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll be joined by Dr. Kevin Pham. He's a COVID analyst with the Heritage Foundation. I want to go over this cocktail of drugs the president was given and other issues. Stand by, please.
You can email Larry at LarryConnorsUSA@gmail.com. LarryConnorsUSA@gmail.com.
Hi, I'm local tax attorney Lance Drury, and I've represented hundreds of individuals and small businesses in disputes with the IRS. So if you've been contacted for past due tax debt or haven't filed taxes in a while, contact me, Lance Drury. And because each client's case is unique, we'll meet face-to-face and go over your tax situation in detail. Together, we'll develop a strategy to resolve your tax issues. I'm experienced, I know your rights, and I'll give you honest answers. Under my 8-point plan, my firm will file the necessary forms needed to resolve your issue with the IRS, and you won't have to worry about talking to their agents. I'll negotiate on your behalf to get you the lowest settlement allowed by law. At the Lance Drury Law Firm, we want to make sure that you're satisfied with the outcome. So call me now, tax resolution attorney Lance Drury, 314-238-7360, or go to LanceDrurylaw.com.
The choice of a lawyer is an important decision and should not be based solely upon advertisements.
This is Larry Connors, USA.
Larry Connors, USA.
Glad to welcome back Dr. Kevin Pham. He's a policy analyst on COVID with the Heritage Foundation. Dr. Pham, glad to have you back on board, sir.
Thanks so much for having me again.
Let me ask, I want several avenues I want to cover, but let me begin with your response, because the media has been on the mainstream media, has been going crazy with the fact that Trump simply said, don't let this dominate your life, don't live in fear of COVID. What is your thought on that point, either that or his remarks or the reaction to it?
I'm totally in agreement with that. We can't be living in fear. And that's when you say don't fear something, you're not saying take it lightly or just disregard the seriousness of it. If you're living not in fear of this virus, then we're understanding the risk that it involves and we're understanding what we have to do to protect ourselves and to protect others. But we're not letting it. We're not letting it force us into this little bunker mentality, hiding from the realities of the world. We should absolutely not let this thing dominate our lives, because we're going to have to learn at some point to live with it as a reality of life. So I think the president's absolutely correct to say, "Do not fear it."
Well, the CNN chief medical correspondent, Dr. Sanjay Gupta, said that Trump's remarks is a total cognitive dissonance. Even within his own mind of what he believes and what he says, they're diametrically opposed at this point, and this encourages completely dangerous, non-scientific approach of herd immunity. I didn't get all that out of that statement, did you?
No, I think the good doctor is adding a little something extra to what the president
bias,
said. He didn't
like
say
bias,
any of
go
that.
Go ahead. I'm sorry, like bias. Go ahead.
Oh, no, I was agreeing that the president didn't say any of that. And he's taking this, extrapolating it way too far. The president's saying very clearly, do not fear. And I think that's 100% correct. Do not let fear dominate your life. Do not let fear of this virus dominate your life.
All right, let me go into a couple other things. The other day when Dr. Sean Conley, and folks, I want to point out to you again to make sure we all understand, Dr. Kevin Pham is a medical doctor, but he has not seen President Trump's records, nor does he hasn't examined him, has not been involved in any of the treatment. So we're not trying to say he has. But Dr. Sean Conley, who is the president's personal physician, it was being quoted as saying, you know, well, we're going to take necessary precautions, taking the Walter Reed just to, as an overabundance of caution. From your viewpoint and our distance, would you agree that probably was a good idea at that point?
And thank you for that caveat. I've been telling everybody, the president is not my patient, but based on what we've seen so far, the days 5 through 7, I believe we're on day 6 right now, but days 5 through 7 of this disease is sort of the critical point. It's when the disease can either begin to get better or a patient can really quickly decompensate and their health can really quickly deteriorate. So, you know, I know this, and then most docs know this, and I'm 100% sure that the president's medical team also know this. So they're keeping a very close eye on him. I'm sure there was some discussion as to whether to keep him at Walter Reed or to bring him to the White House. I think the important thing to note here is that at the White House, you do have medical facilities there, so they can render treatment and care at the White House too. And so even though this is a critical period, it's not like the president is without medical care at this time. So I think he's in pretty good hands right now.
Now, there was a report that came out that supposedly the president had a fever, oxygen saturation level below 94% Friday morning, and that things rapidly deteriorated. The drop in oxygen saturation to 93% by Saturday and might have even gone as low as 80%. What does that mean exactly? Can you explain for us?
That is the effect of this virus. When the virus is starting to attack the lungs, it causes an inflammation. That's the thing that we've been worried about the most. The early signs of a cytokine storm is when you have inflammation of the lungs. And what that looks like on the inside is that you start getting fluid where it's not supposed to be. And that fluid gets between your lungs and your blood and the air outside. So you're not getting enough oxygen. And that's why we see that oxygen saturations drop really low. And this virus has this very dangerous trait where it lets people just walk around even with a very low oxygen saturation. And so that they were able to catch that probably gave them enough information to act early. As we know, the president received a course of, and I think he's receiving his last course of remdesivir today. And they started him on dexamethasone and some other drugs. So they've been fairly aggressive with this, and the president hasn't had any adverse reactions that we know of.
And I want
none that they've reported.
Yeah, I want to get into that cocktail of drugs, but before we leave the breathing thing, Rachel Maddow had claimed that as you watch the president leave the helicopter and then kind of get up on the portico and try to speak, that he was seemingly to struggle for breath and almost breathing through his mouth a few times, trying to stand there poised and so forth. And I looked at the video, and I tend to agree. It's like if I had suddenly run up at the top flight of stairs, I'm supposed to stand there and speak to someone. I am kind of trying to catch my breath. I'm not totally out of breath, but my heart's racing, and I'm trying to come. Did you see the video of him up there? Did you have any thought at that time that he May was struggling truly with breathing because of COVID, or just a combination of that and going up the stairs?
We've seen that the president is a very vigorous man, so I think that under normal circumstances, you probably, again, I don't really keep track of his health that closely, but under normal circumstances, I suspect he would have been able to do that just fine. And in that video, it did look like he was drawing in breath really deeply. But, you know, he was actually sick. We know he was sick over the past couple of days. I'm not surprised that he'd be a little winded, even if it was just a cold or probably a bad cold or a flu or something like that.
Right.
Like, that would knock you out and make it a little bit tough to go up those stairs. Those stairs they're not a small number of stairs.
Right, right. Yeah. So the other thing, the cocktail of drugs, very quickly, what's he been under? And then I want to narrow down one of them. Go ahead, sir.
Sure. So I believe the first thing he got was the polyclonal antibodies from Regeneron, which is a new experimental drug. It's basically what we've heard about is convalescent plasma, but distilled down to the things that we think will help. He got that first, and he got that fairly early on. They started remdesivir shortly thereafter, And that's usually a five-day course. And the fifth day, I believe, is today. And then he's also on dexamethasone, which is a steroid that helps prevent the inflammatory process. And if it's present, it also flattens the inflammatory response.
Now, on that point, Dr. Megan Ranney, who is an analyst for CNN and is with Brown University as an emergency physician, said dexamethasone can cause psychosis, delirium, mania, and suggesting that the president might be suffering psychosis going forward because he's taking that drug.
You know, there are sometimes people do have very strong reactions to steroids, but it's not a very common reaction. And dexamethasone is a very common drug. You know, pediatricians give this to babies all the time. This is not a very dangerous drug. It doesn't have a lot of side effects that we can expect. So the president seems like himself, maybe a little bit toned down a little bit because he's been sick and he's recovering. But other than that, I have no concerns about him taking dexamethasone. It's a very safe drug, very, very commonly used.
The other thing that's been pointed out is that apparently no one in the world that we know of has had all three of these drugs. And I keep hearing they're all considered experimental at this point, and we certainly don't know how all three of them given at the same time interact. Give me the facts on that, best you know.
Sure. Well, dexamethasone, there's no way we can call that experimental drug. It's been used for a long time. It's a pretty old drug. Experimental only insofar as it hasn't been approved for COVID-19, but really nothing. The only thing, actually, I don't think remdesivir has even been approved for COVID-19 yet. So nothing has been approved for COVID-19. It doesn't really count as an experimental drug. Remdesivir is a five-day course of drugs, and it didn't have a very high rate of adverse reactions. I haven't seen phase 3 trial results yet, but it was seen as a fairly safe drug. And same thing with the polyclonal antibodies from Regeneron. They didn't have a very high side effect profile. And the president received that first and did not develop any adverse reactions. Again, none that they reported.
Now, again, CDC says that those 74 or older, that their chance of getting COVID and surviving is 94 to 95% survival rate. I'm sure that's also based on no underlying morbidity issue.
Right. Just based on the overall population, and that is the breakdown. But if you have certain comorbidities, that increases your risk. If you have fewer comorbidities or none, then you're probably going to be, it's probably going to be like 98 or 99%. The president is in that age group where the risk of mortality or the risk of actually just serious outcomes in general begins to increase, but he's not at the maximum risk group, which is 85 and over.
We also, they're trying to make a big deal of the fact that only cancer and heart disease will kill more Americans this year than COVID, and that the virus already killed more than twice as many Americans of either strokes or heart Alzheimer's, four times as many as diabetes, eight times as gun violence and vehicle accidents. In the last 30 seconds, what's the barometer? Do we really have one to say that this really is more than what we normally would expect with, quote, a flu? About 30 seconds, sir.
Yeah, it's certainly more than what we expect with the flu. So far, we can count over 200,000 deaths due to COVID-19. And I know some people have concerns about overcounting, but you'd have to overcount by at least 100,000 to meet even the worst flu, worst flu season that we've had in a long time. So it's certainly going to be worse than influenza.
All right. Well, Dr. Pham, again, we appreciate your time. I'd like to be calling on you again as we move forward.
Sure thing. Thanks so much for having me.
Very quickly, one final question, sir. Do you consider the president's out of the woods at this point, yes or no?
No, not yet.
All right. Thank you, Doc. Thanks again. Dr. Kevin Pham, policy analyst on COVID for the Heritage Foundation. We'll take a break when we come back. Voting polls and a warning.
You can connect with Larry on Twitter at Larry Connors USA.
Shoot your eye down. check you
this
in
is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
I'll remind you again, the only poll that really counts is the election day and the election process, those voting in advance of election day. But there's another survey out, Suffolk University USA Today poll, and this was taken, a large portion of it, I should say, conducted after Trump was diagnosed with coronavirus. Focusing on the critical swing state of Florida, now less than a month out from Election Day, it shows Trump and Biden neck and neck. 45% for each, 6% undecided. Or at least that's what they're saying. Florida is a must-win state for Trump. 29 electoral votes up for grabs, obviously. That's why Joe Biden went back in there yesterday, his second visit to Florida, trying to get out and be seen more since Trump was in Walter Reed. And, of course, now apparently won't be able to travel that much for a while. In the meantime, word coming out of Ohio, this should set your teeth on edge and make you think, okay, here it comes, here it comes. They are reporting more than 2 million Ohio residents requested mail-in ballot applications prior to the start of early voting on Tuesday. That doubles the count at the same time in 2016 and 2012. 2 million, more than double mail-in ballot applications compared to 2016 and 2012. They are now saying the state will have, quote, pretty conclusive results on election night if early returns show that Trump or Biden win the state by a wide margin. But if close, we're told, the election results that night might say one thing and results change over the ensuing weeks because they're going to allow, in Ohio, ballots in that state counted for up to 10 days after Election Day, as long as they're postmarked by November 2nd. Meaning the election results displayed the night of November 3rd in Ohio, unofficial, because they won't have all of the mail-in ballots possibly in. Just telling you, be aware. And then you should also know what's going on with a group known as Center for Tech and Civic Life. They are actively involved in ballot harvesting. Here's an example of what they've done. Saturday, September the 26th, as advertised by the Biden campaign, Madison poll workers turned out across the city of Madison, Wisconsin, to register voters, collect absentee ballots, even though in-person absentee ballot collection is not supposed to start until 2 weeks before Election Day. That's according to Wisconsin state election law. But they were out there passing around these absentee ballots, taking them, dropping them into red zipper bags, no security whatsoever. Poll workers apparently witnessing people's blank ballots, just throwing them into the bags. We don't know what happened after that. Ballot harvesting, a clear way to obviously try to steal votes. Orange County, California, where a Republican stronghold for a long time. Last time around, 250,000 harvested ballots turned in on Election Day. 250,000 votes just suddenly show up on Election Day. And apparently the Center for Tech and Civic Life has been showering numerous cities and monies across Wisconsin. City of Milwaukee getting $2 million, Madison $1.2 million, Green Bay $1 million, Kenosha $860,000, Racine, Wisconsin $940,000, and Center for Tech and Civil Life, apparently funded by Mark Zuckerberg, eBay, Google, and other tech billionaires. And while we're talking about this ballot harvesting and the money they're giving to help some of them make sure they can carry out what they need, it appears that St. Louis County Executive Sam Page has taken grants from that same firm. Sam Page, of course, running for the St. Louis County Executive. Many of you may be voting in that election. one way or the other. But if he's taking money from this group, these ballot harvesting specialists operating in Wisconsin and Pennsylvania, I'd raise some question about it. They did in Wisconsin. They've done it in Pennsylvania. We can't say that all of it's to be done to steal the election. But, anytime folks are out just grabbing ballots saying, we'll deliver them for you, and don't let anyone take your ballot if you request an absentee ballot. If you don't want to stick it in the mail, you personally hand deliver it. You take it to the polling center in advance. Just don't take a chance with your vote. But by all means, make sure you do vote. All right, the next hour, we're going to focus more on how the media has had an absolute meltdown because President Trump said, do not be afraid, do not live in fear of COVID. Stand by, please.
This is Larry Connors, USA.
Larry Connors, USA.
You've been listening to Larry Connors, USA. Please listen to previous and future podcasts.